Not long ago, air conditioners were running full blast, but winter is on the doorstep, and pretty soon our furnaces will be working hard. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We'll talk about heating and cooling alternatives, including a technology that is growing in popularity, the mini split heat pump. We'll also review the to-do list for getting your home ready for winter, and Bill will answer your questions about the home improvement projects you're facing right now. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. And although it's been a very mild fall so far, chances are pretty good that winter is coming and we will have to turn our furnaces on eventually. So we're going to start off today by talking about some heating and cooling alternatives. Bill, and I know you take issue with the introduction to the show because you say that your air conditioner was blasting yesterday.
It sure was. You bet.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk about this because so often in conversations with listeners, mini split heat pumps have been coming up
right
in conversation. And we don't really go into what those are, but they seem to be coming more common. I'll try to say both at the same time. And just tell me what they are.
Well, you know, it's basically what it is an air source heat pump. And they've been around for a long time. But, you know, and that what's that mean really does? Okay, what do we mean by that? What it does is it extracts heat out of the air. You know, even if it's with these newer models that they're getting down, it's almost like computers. I mean, every time you open up a magazine, they're getting more efficient. But some of them operate, they can pull air out at a fairly decent efficiency down to 20 below zero. So, I mean, for us, you know, it's a good alternative.
So they go in the wall.
Well, yeah, if you know, that's what's fun. If you watch a lot of movies and TV shows, I'm always looking for stuff in the background. And you will always see them in Canadian shows, Scandinavian shows, Russian, you know, all this stuff there.
What are you watching?
Well, you know, all those crime dramas, those forensic file things, you know. There's some people I really don't care for, and so I'm trying to figure out how do we handle this.
Okay, don't say that on the radio.
Yeah, So really what you do is you have on the outside, there's a compressor. And if you're around sometimes, maybe hospitals, office buildings, you may see on the outside of the building underneath windows these little units sitting on the ground that are about maybe 3 feet wide, 3 feet tall, and they've got like a big fan on the side. That's a mini splits condenser and compressor unit that sits outside. So it's not that big old bulky maybe gray thing you have
right
for an air conditioning compressor. So what that does is it extracts the heat out of the air and for in the heat mode. And then it goes through refrigerant line and it goes to the inside to either a wall-mounted unit that's usually mounted maybe a foot down from the ceiling, about 3 feet wide and about a foot tall, just sticks out a little bit. And then, so then that basically is your delivery system. So I put one in a little garage up in Minnesota for this extreme heat like we had yesterday. And so it just has a small remote control. You set it whatever temperature, and like I'll just set it at 68, and the remote is actually the thermostat as well. I click it on. And the one thing about it is they're very, very efficient, but they're also super quiet because, you know, I'm getting old, so I had to get up and actually put my ear to it. I thought, you know, okay, I goofed something up. But they're so quiet, and the thing is you can just, like, zone your home then this way. So
is it one compressor per unit?
Well, now it's you can get up to eight. Some of the major brands that have been around a long time, some of those get up to eight, like, heads, you know, throughout. And each one of them you can have at a different temperature. So if you're in cooling mode or heat mode, you can have, you know, say you want your office, because it's got all this equipment, you want, you know, more cooling going than you can. The good thing about this, too, is let's say you have a really old home. I was at a listener's house last month, and he had a really nice, super kept up home built in the early 1900s. And it was a clay tile block, no insulation whatsoever. And so how am I going to heat and cool this thing? Because the ductwork was completely, you know, antiquated, but almost a brand new furnace. And so the furnace is still good. Let's say you get mini split heat pumps, you know, the air source heat pumps. If they're only, maybe you buy some that are only good down to 10 below, well, then this old furnace or the furnace with old ductwork, that could just be your backup. So you'd use this high efficiency unit, very high efficiency unit, to handling all your heating and cooling, except for when it got real cold, then this furnace that instead of replacing it, let's just use it as the emergency backup. And this way they can zone the house. So like maybe they'll put four units in. You can also duct them too, so that they're hidden, you know, put them in soffits right. And that. Where we really see a lot of them is these big commercial projects like apartment buildings. It's so expensive to heat and cool those individual apartments a lot of times. There's so much duct work that, you know, some of these buildings are saving up to $100,000 because they don't have to run the duct work. I know it cuts out some work for some people, but the technology is getting there so well that the more we use them, the more we understand, you know, how to move the air around, say, from room to room. In some cases, they'll maybe put one unit for three rooms, and then they'll put these small transfer fans in the wall, like above doors, to help move the air around.
But what's it going to do to
they're
your,
not that expensive.
Okay, what's it going to do to your electrical bill? Because I know, you know, a lot of people have different sources for fuel
sure.
for furnaces.
Sure. The nice thing is that since they are a heat pump, they're very, very efficient. So, you know, some of them, you know, are up there just about like a geothermal, especially in the cooling mode. So, you know, they'll actually, you know, be well over 100%, you know, 200%. You know, that's the numbers people usually use rather than SEER rating and all this. But the nice thing is they're not that expensive. A lot of heating and cooling people like them now because there's not much maintenance on them either. And a lot of times this will get rid of those problem calls, like say somebody has a second floor, half of the second floor room. You know, it's always cold up here. Well, okay, you can put this in. And then for efficiency, it's very high. For cost, they're very inexpensive for cost. But it also depends, you know, how the building is too.
Right.
The more efficient, the better it's going to be.
In a lot of really old houses, mm-hmm. People will use space heaters to supplement their heat.
Right.
So compare and contrast for me. I mean, this is not just like a wall-mounted space heater.
No, actually, that's the funny part. You can run a mini split a lot cheaper than these little roll around or milk house heaters because they are higher efficiency. You know, these little heaters are 100, you know, the max they can be is 100%. But when you're extracting and using compressors, you can be over 200%. So that's where you're going to actually get some air movement instead of just using radiant heat. It's going to be some have filtered systems, some have it's a lot more air moving around to handle. Like the one that I have handles, I think, 800 square feet, just the one wall-mounted head. So that heat and cools that size of room, or one of these little ones, yeah, they'll say they'll do 1,000 square feet. Well, that might take it from, say, you know, 58 degrees to 59 degrees. But they're just – and they're very expensive as well.
So – and with the cooling – how effective is it as a cooling unit?
That's really where they're better at.
Really?
Yeah, they're amazing for cooling. You know, it's amazing. People will say, well, you know, when you're trying to extract heat out of air, the farther north you go, you know, it doesn't work. Well, it's amazing how many people in northern Minnesota that I run into that are putting in mini splits for their primary heating and cooling, and then just for backup, they're going out buying these small wall radiant heaters, you know, the one, very inexpensive ones to handle that temperature when it gets below a certain point. Otherwise, this unit handles those temperatures. And they're not – the thing is, with you don't have all that ductwork, a lot of times they make a lot more economic sense because there's do-it-yourself ones out. You'd better be kind of handy if you're going to put those in. But, you know, it's better to have an HVAC person put them in for you. But the one we put in was a do-it-yourself, and it was from a very good company. That's why we went that route. But it was very fast to put in. It was $1,500. So I've got $1,500 wrapped up in my heating and my cooling for roughly 800 square feet at very high efficiency. In fact, when we see the electric bills, and we really don't see much of a notch up at all.
Interesting. So is this something that you know, we've talked a lot about geothermal on the show
right.
in the past. Is this something that people would use in conjunction with geothermal?
Well,
or
you
is
know,
it an either or?
It, you know, it's an either or. Some will use them in conjunction. They can go with a smaller geothermal and then supplement maybe with these. That's where, you know, it used to be I need to heat and cool my house. It was a pretty simple option. We've got so many things out there. In the industry now, I don't really know how the heating and cooling people are able to keep up with it all because there's so many new products and the efficiencies are getting so well. The refrigerants, the compressors that they use in these, and the motors, the technology is so high now for heating and cooling people. It's become so much more of a science than buying a furnace and throwing some ductwork up.
Now, when a couple years ago, maybe 5 years ago, you first told me about these and I started doing some research, it was hard to find information about
yeah.
them. It was hard to find people who sold them. Is it a lot more common now?
It's very common now, right. It's, you know, you just Google mini split. You don't even need to put heat pumps. You just Google mini split and you've got pages and pages and pages of them. The building magazines, almost every issue has at least one article on them. You know, people with saying, okay, I just built this house to the energy code standards, and I'm heating it with one mini split heat pump. You know, and I'm looking, okay, yeah, they're down in the Carolinas, and no, they're over in Maine. And so,
wow.
You know, it depends on how efficient your home is too. But really, where they, like I say, where they're really handy is older buildings where ductwork is so hard to come back and you know, put in so it actually delivers like it's supposed to. So it gives the heating and cooling people a, you know, a viable option to make it easier for them but and save money and then a lot of times a lot higher efficiency and less utility bills.
Right. Or if you have an old farmhouse that has electric baseboard heat, this sounds like a very good
yes.
option as well.
Yes, it does.
So we're nearly to the break, but, you know, obviously we need to be thinking about if we're not investing in a mini split heat pump, we also need to be thinking about other things to get our houses ready for
right.
winter. So it's time to take a look at the furnace. What do I need to be doing right
okay,
now?
Okay, you know, first of all, I think it's very wise investment to have your heating and cooling person every fall to come and check it out. Even I don't care if it's, you know, a year old. Have them come back and do the diagnostics on the unit because most, especially the newer furnaces and that, have an ability to do the diagnostics, see how efficiently they're working, and check and make sure that the right filters are in there, make sure that the homeowner has replaced the filter since they were there last year. You know, check the ductwork, but make sure if you're doing it yourself, then you want to make sure that carbon monoxide detector is handy and that filter is clean.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, is here today. He is ready to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, and he is here to answer your questions. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to questions, all right, we were talking a little bit about other things we should think about as we're heading into winter. What else should be on the list? I know a lot of us have leaky windows.
A lot of us have leaky windows, and, you know, if you can find some good storm units, you know, do some research now because there's a ton of information out there on some of the new generation of storm windows, low-E storm windows, high-efficiency units, where it's very cost-effective to put these units on than to maybe replace your windows. It just depends on, you know, how well your existing windows operate. But that only covers the area that has the glass on it, you know, the storm window where air leakage there. Where we see most of the leakage usually is especially when we built in the 70s, we'd always, before the, you know, the interior trim around the window went on, we would insulate around the window with, there's a small gap all the way around the window for adjustment. And we would just stuff fiberglass in there. And we thought, you know, the harder you stuff that fiberglass, the better it's going to be. And all that was just a better air filter is all it was. So Now, if you pull the trim off, that may be your largest leaker on all of your windows and doors to the outside and to the garage especially, is to pull that trim off. If you're halfway handy, pull the trim off very carefully and then use some minimal expanding foam. And try not to do it all at once. I always like to tell people just do it in three passes. You know, just nice, easy, just take your time. Because if you put in the wrong type of foam, like expanding foam, it'll push the jam in, and so the windows and doors may not operate when you get done. A lot of times that may be one of your biggest losers right there. And one thing, if you are on your existing storm windows, if you put them on every fall like a lot of people do, do not caulk along the bottom. You caulk the sides and the top. You never caulk the bottom. There's these little bumps in the bottom of the most storm windows. They're for a reason. So when you get condensation inside the window, that the water can drop down and then go out that sill. That's why the sill is at a slight angle so the water can shed. Well, if you caulk the bottom of that storm window, the water gets trapped, and that's why a lot of these older homes you go and the bottom of the window's all rotted out.
Don't do that.
And then if you are going to have somebody insulate your attic, especially if it's an older house, if you have any knob and tube wiring, the old black wiring, especially the older farmhouses, it's against the electrical code to put any insulation in contact with that. We did it all the time. So if your house has, you know, some cellulose blown in there maybe in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you need to pull that away because it's a very big fire hazard. We didn't know. I mean, we just didn't do the research back then. We just add more insulation. And since you add more insulation, if you didn't air seal first, all you did was really possibly make the attic even worse shape, because we've learned that if we don't air seal that ceiling and stop air from getting into the attic, that adding more insulation actually can cause a lot more condensation. So look up in your attic and see if any bathroom vent fans, you know, the ductwork comes out of your bathrooms or from your kitchen range maybe. Make sure that they go outside, and by outside I mean out the roof or out the overhang. And if it goes out the overhang of the house, make sure that there's no vented soffit, that overhang that comes out over the windows and your siding. Make sure that there's no vents within about 7 or 8 feet left and right, because we used to run, you know, the air out of a bathroom fan out into the overhang because we thought we don't want a roof leak. It goes out into that overhang, and then if you have attic ventilation like it's required by building code, is that just takes that air right back up. Northeast part of Iowa has a tendency to use 5-gallon buckets. That doesn't work. They're running their vents into 5-gallon buckets sitting in the attic. And I'm saying Northeast Iowa because that's the only place we see this. And then some are running the duct up to the peak of the attic. So they're thinking, okay, that warm air is going to go out that ridge vent at the very top. No, it doesn't. What happens is a lot of times the cold air comes back and then it condenses and causes a lot of moisture issues. So it has to go, the best scenario is to go out the roof with an insulated pipe. But if you can get up in the attic and pull the insulation back and then air seal where there's any lights, any, you know, junctures of walls, any place where any air can come up from down below into the attic should be sealed, like with mastic. Mastic is a product they put on ductwork. It's a messy product. You put it on with a brush or with gloves, but it really, really probably works the best. In big gaps, you put expanding foam.
Okay.
But we've learned that that's probably one of the biggest things we can do for energy and longevity of the house.
All right. Well, let's get to the calls. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Diane is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Hi.
We live in a house that's over 100 years old in Cedar Rapids, and we're trying to replace our roof, and we have a hipped ridge skylight that's probably original to the house. I can't find anyone to repair it. What options would we have for covering the opening? And I'd also like you to address the care for a hot water boiler heating system. What should we be doing each fall? Should we have somebody come in and check that?
Yeah. Yes. On that hot water boiler, that's hot water boilers are kind of they're touchy. You really need to have someone that specifically works on boilers. That's why technicians that work on boilers, either installation or do repairs, that's why they have yearly training. Because a lot of things can happen with a boiler because you're dealing with pressure, you're dealing with water, you're dealing with contaminants. There's a lot of things that's going on in a boiler, you know, that they've been around for years and they've had their fair share of problems, but you need to have someone that's specifically trained for, you know, working on boilers. That's where you really want to make sure that they're certified. And most plumbing and heating contractors know that they will, you know, usually have at least one person on staff that specifically works on boilers. As far as your hip ridge skylight goes, the Cedar Rapids, did you try to see if they have a remodelers council in Cedar Rapids?
I've never heard of anything like that.
Okay, I would try them or the Home Builders Association, and because usually somebody that specifically works on the skylights will belong to those associations. Des Moines has an extremely good remodelers council there, and if you're in Des Moines, I'd be able to, you know, say, okay, they'll have somebody in their group that'd be able to help you with that. That's an item that most people don't see. They're not familiar with. You may have to go with a glass replacement person sometimes, but yet they're going to have to work in conjunction with the roofer because there's so many flashing issues that have to go with the skylight. So I would check with the Home Builders Association in Cedar Rapids. They're a great group there, and ask them if they have someone that specifically works on retrofits or remodels of historic homes, because it is going to take a historic home professional to probably work on that.
All right, Diane, good luck with that, and thanks a lot for your call. Ralph is up next in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi there. Yesterday we had a gully washer of a rain, and the water went over the gutters. I think they're only 4 inches deep. Would it be a good idea to go with 6-inch?
Well, you know, it seems like most people now are, moving to either 5 or 6. It's a lot better to have 6, but, you know, a lot of times we don't have those big gully washers, but when we do, it's nice to be able to get that water away. The one thing is, though, when we do collect that much more water, we have to be sure that, you know, we're getting that water, say, farther out away from the house as well. We try to get that water, you know, at least 10 feet away, and I know that's, you know,
hard.
That's hard. Most people don't, you know, their downspouts come out and they go a couple feet, but yeah, 6 inches is a lot better. You know, of course, then you have to upgrade the downs and everything for the 6, but you know, it's amazing. 6 inches, Ralph, you know, 6 inches always used to be just for commercial, and it's surprising how many people are now putting them on their homes because we have these steep pitched huge roofs that 4 inches, I think, were made for the old ranch style houses we had back in the 70s, you know, that little 412 pitch, real shallow pitch, not a whole lot of roofing. You know, these bigger ones have twice the roof, so why didn't we upgrade the gutters? Well, you know, we didn't. You know, we're getting twice as much water. That's a good point. That's a good point. I shouldn't say twice as much water, but you get twice the speed coming down. But, yeah, I would upgrade it to a 6 if you're going to put on new gutters.
All right, Ralph, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brian is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I had a question on the mini split systems. I'm getting a sunroom put onto the south side of my house. It's a ranch house, and it has geothermal now. And the builder gave me two options. He said you could go possibly with a mini split, or, and forgive me on this, I'm probably going to butcher, but a PTAC.
Sure, sure.
And what is that?
A PTAC is like, you know what you see in motels, the unit that you see down next to, say, the floor. You go in there and adjust the temperature all the time. Like, I always turn it to max cool. But, yeah, well, those are – did he say which one he would rather do, or?
Well, he said that the PTAC system would be cheaper, but the mini split would be a better system. And because the room's only a 13 by 16 – but it has a bunch of windows because it's basically a sunroom. We're kind of confused on where to go. I think I'd rather go with the mini splits, but it's there's not too many companies out there that I've had much luck with as far as working with me with the mini splits. They seem to shy away from them, actually.
Well, that's kind of strange. I guess that, you know, it's kind of maybe area driven, where some have tried them and they really like them. And I guess it's just because I like the mini split. It's a lot quieter. I mean, if you want quality of life, if you want to sit there and actually read or hear a bird, you know, you'll want to go with the mini split as opposed to, you know, the other unit, because we all know how loud those are when they kick on and off, wake you up middle of the night.
Especially as they age.
Yes, and yeah, that's a good point. Especially with all that glass, I would like a mini split. Now, you know, have you researched any of them yourself?
I tried to. I kept getting the same brands, Fujitsu and Mitsubishi.
Yeah, that's about, you know, everybody talks about those all the time. You know, there's a few other ones. I put in a Frederick's because it was a do-it-yourself unit, and it actually was fairly simple. I mean, for a carpenter to actually, you know, do this, it went in very good. It wasn't as high as efficiency, though, as Mitsubishi or Fujitsu. You know, those are the two brands that we see on a lot of commercial projects, and it's because they've been around the longest. You know, they have, probably a lot more research behind them, a lot more parts availability and that. You know, I'd probably stick with a name brand. I think I would just check with a few other contractors around. And I know there's a couple in Des Moines. I've seen it on their vans even driving around. But there's some down there.
So keep making phone calls and checking websites.
Yeah. And, you know, and I would, you know, maybe there's another case of bringing it up. But the Des Moines Remodelers Council, those guys might know. You can also check with the Iowa Energy Center. They have their resource station there in Ankeny. And a lot of times they've done some tests on heating and cooling equipment. So you may want to get a hold of them. Director there is Mark Petrie, and ask him, maybe he knows of some people as well in the area.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call.
You can join
the conversation, 866-780-9100. We've got an email from Sam in West Des Moines. I have a story and a half home with a walkout lower level. It has a conventional furnace and air conditioner. It's hard to have all three levels comfortable at the same time. When I replaced the furnace, I was thinking of looking into zoning so the upstairs main level and downstairs would be separate zones. How difficult is that to do, and what are the main concerns that I need to be thinking about?
You know, one of the reasons right now that it's not comfortable is in the past few years, there's been a lot of attention paid to proper duct design. And so, I don't know how old, did you say how old the house was, Sam? Say that.
Let's look. Nope.
Okay. You know, the older the home, probably the worse the ductwork was for distribution to certain rooms, especially if there's been remodeling done, things like that. Today, when you put a new addition or new home, it's required by state energy code that you do a manual JNS, which means that you have to figure the square footage, the R values of the walls, the windows, everything, ventilation, air leakage, into figuring what size of heating and cooling unit will handle the area like your whole 1.5, and what unit would be. Well, then there's a manual D for ductwork. I would ask your heating and cooling person just to see if he can do a manual D and see if the ductwork that you have right now is adequate for the unit you put in. We keep putting in new heating and cooling units. We keep bringing them in out of the van, running them down the steps on a roller, a cart, and then we plug them into the existing ductwork, the ductwork that was designed for a completely different unit, completely different size fan a lot of times. And if it's not working now, all it's going to do is be a more high-efficient, hopefully more high-efficient unit performing the exact same way as far as comfort. They're either going to have to change the ductwork, or they're going to have to put in some booster fans, or leave doors open, or put returns in, or something to be able to get that air so that the temperature is the same in each room. That's why we design things new, is so that little Johnny's room up on the second floor, you know, is within a degree or so of what it is and a lower clear on the other side, that's design. That's how it's supposed to be done.
So getting somebody in to actually look at the ductwork and say what's working, what's not working.
Right. And putting in a high-efficiency furnace may not help. So then maybe this is a case where if that's going to be so expensive, and it usually is very expensive to redo ductwork, that it would pay for itself to put in something like a mini-split heat pump. Because that would mean that you'll have the temperature you want in any of those areas, you know, until at least, you know, 10, 15 below zero. And then, okay, well, I'm a couple degrees off. Well, you can live with that
right, for
the amount of times that happens. I would look at that as an option, but, you know, it depends on how your house is built. It may be such a case that they can do some modification in the ductwork and be able to give you the comfort you want. Sometimes it's just because there's furniture in the way of a return that brings the, you know, the air from a room back down to the heating and cooling unit. Sometimes it's just a piece of furniture that's in the way, or how people live, or they keep their doors shut, or they have the carpet, you know, the room air is coming out of a room for a return, and you've got the carpet all the way up against the bottom of the door. There's so many little things, so I would have the heating and cooling person look at that, but mini splits would be an option there.
Sounds
like I work for them or something, doesn't it?
It does, but you don't. We should probably make that clear.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This one's from Helen. She says, thank you for the information on venting in bathrooms. I have the worst problem with mold on the ceiling and the walls. I've had two different fans installed and had the electrician check to see if it's vented properly, and the problem continues. The electrician told me that the vent runs to the overhang. What should I do?
Well, if it goes to the overhang, I would have them come back and say, you know, we're still having a lot of problems. We just go ahead and run it out the roof. They make very good flashing and vent hoods that don't leak. People are always worrying about them leaking. But they have to make sure that that vent pipe that goes from the fan to the roof is insulated and isn't that cheap, like white plastic with a wire in it. It has to be like a solid pipe and insulate it to at least an R8. And air seal that is, and seal all the joints with mastic so that this thing is nice and quiet. And if they use flex ductwork, which is just, you know, basically a waste of time, it's going to cause a lot more restriction. And if there's a little tear somewhere in there, you're going to get moisture inside of that until it builds up and then comes down through your ceiling.
So you want it to be a straight shot.
Solid pipe, right, okay. A solid pipe. The best is out the roof. But if they do run it out the overhang, the other option is, if you can't get it out the roof, is to, you know, block off the vents within 7 feet each way, 7 to 8 feet each way. That's not the best option. So the best option is just go ahead and have it run out the roof.
Okay, block off the vents. Why?
Because what happens is, like right now, what may be occurring is, especially if there's fiberglass insulation in the attic, is that air is going out the soffit, the overhang. Now, the air ventilation system works that the air comes in that overhang and goes out the ridge. That, you know, it's just a natural airflow. It's required that you have attic ventilation. So what happens then is that air comes out the pipe, and then the ventilation air pulls it as it comes out the pipe, this wet air right back inside where it starts to cool, especially in the winter, starts to cool again. It condenses, and then it soaks the gypsum board. And in other cases, if they did run the pipe, they may have angled it funny, and if they didn't insulate it, you'll get moisture in that, and it runs back, and then it comes into the fan.
All right, so you're creating a
Yeah, you need someone
problem.
That actually, yeah. It's, sometimes you need to have somebody that actually knows ductwork to put those in.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Paul is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Bob, you are the most knowledgeable person, and I've been dealing with something for 10 years. I have a house that is 95 years old. It was built very high standards, commercial quality with cold air returns and everything, and it had basically coal, then gravity oil, and now we have a unit that was not sized for the house. Also in the attic, there is no ventilation out. It's a three-story house. Basically, in the summer, gets cooled in the attic and drops down very humid air into our living areas, where it's basically very warm, and it keeps getting colder as you go down
the
floor, and then in the basement is freezing. So obviously, our vents leak. But sounds like if we keep that as a backup, some split systems would be the best idea to ventilate the attic. I was thinking of a solar fan, but then in the winter I'd have to, you know, the peak of the attic is not any vents like in modern houses.
Yeah. So like in your case, this is exactly why the state of Minnesota made it illegal to their code that you cannot add any insulation to an attic without air sealing first, because we found out that there's so much air going up. So in your case, you know, your attic ventilation is a lot of times pulls air, and the only place you can get air to go out, in many cases on these older homes, is through all the leaks in your ceiling, or up. You've got a stairway probably going up into that attic, don't you? Is there a stairway that walks that you can walk to get into the attic space?
No, the attic is the third floor.
Oh,
and the peaks of the attic have been covered up with a kind of a cardboard paneling.
Okay,
and there's a bathroom up there where we, so it's
boy,
there is no escape of air unless you have a window which is maybe 10 feet down further from the peak to. And then you leave windows open, and it rains in the summer.
Yeah, you need someone that understands building science on your home. Yours is kind of a one that's going to take a lot of thought and a lot of steps to make that to make that third floor where it's nice and dry and comfortable winter and summer.
Well, we had a high efficiency HVAC put in that basically doesn't cool the house, because the coolant is running outside in unfinished areas that are, and then it basically, our inside thermostat only, it's based on whatever is outside the day before. When it was hot, you couldn't get it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
obviously we need a building technician.
Yes, you need someone that really understands.
Like through Mid-America?
Mid-America, if that's your supplier, they may be able to give you...
An audit?
Well, yeah, of course, an audit is just going to tell you what you have. There's I wish I could give the names and everything for you, but there are some people down there. I would have someone that is... there's a group called like the Element Group, somebody like that, the Element Group. They come in and do testing on your home, and they do all the diagnostics. There's other companies as well, but that's the one that, you know, comes to mind right now, where they will do a blower door test. They'll do duct testing and figure out exactly what you need to do, where to insulate, where to air seal. There are professionals like that in the state, and you know, they're in Des Moines. So you might give those a try. I'm not pushing any company. It's just that's the ones that I'm familiar with.
All right, Paul, good luck with that. Thanks
a
lot for your
call. They'd be able to help you out.
We've got a number of questions about mini split heat pumps here. This one's from Josh in Des Moines. Would you recommend mini splits as the only source of heating for new construction homes?
If your house is very efficient, I mean, if you're getting down new homes, when you're getting your blower door tested, things like, you know exactly how much air you're leaking, what your R values are, things like that. I would put that into the equation. I would look at that compared to, you know, whatever your high efficiency equipment would be right now, because you're still going to have ventilation. I mean, that's the one thing you're still going to have. And sometimes it's tied into existing ductwork. There's a lot of little issues that go with that. But myself, that's what I'm going to use up in northern Minnesota. But I'm going to have backup. I'm going to have that electric baseboard backup. But in Iowa, you know, you're still going to have something when it gets down super cold.
Right.
Just for those periods. But the rest of the time, I mean, I would balance everything out because, you know, you have to look at, like, say, geothermal. You look at it up front. People say, oh, it's way too expensive. Well, yeah, you know, initially it is. But, you know, the thing is, by the time you look at all the rebates, the tax credits, your property tax credits, you add all that stuff up. Now it's right in there with everything else. So you have to, you know, you have to do your due diligence and do your research and find out, okay, what's the actual bottom line going to be? What's the efficiency? How long is that equipment going to last? Who can service it for me? Who's familiar with putting it in? You know, all those little things like that. And, you know, in my design, do I want to have maybe this unit on the wall? To me, it's just like a picture. I mean, I like looking at it because I'm thinking at how quiet it is. You know, it's just that's the geek side. But, you know, that's what you're going to have to do. Is it going to work for me all the time? So me, I would put some baseboard heat. But, I mean, I have geothermal and I love it. So you've got to look at everything and whether you're going to like maybe the look.
That's about
the only thing it comes down to a lot of times.
All right. Todd is on the line somewhere on I-35 right now. Hi, Todd.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Hi. What's your question?
I'm in a new construction right now, and I actually took a hard look at mini splits. I wasn't aware that one compressor could run a number of units, and if that is the case, it probably would have swayed my decision to go more with mini splits. But how do you address separate rooms? Do you have a mini split in each room, for example, like with a we have a three-bedroom new construction with living room and two full bathrooms. Wouldn't you need a mini split in each of the bathrooms
in order
to maintain heat and AC?
You know, that's a great question, because that's the thing that I asked specifically to an engineer sitting on the other side of the table he said, well, first of all, you know, you've got to have – if you're building a new home, you know, you're building it to energy code standards. You've got a very good thermal envelope. And so I said, how do we keep those two rooms the same? And so they either use transfer fans like above the door, and some people, if they don't like that, then they'll go with the ducted mini split instead of just having the head. And that's how they're handling it in these apartment buildings. Is I walked into this apartment building, it's all redone, and I'm looking around, you know, okay, where's the heads? Because I know it's mini split, and that was the first time I'd seen it with the ductwork installed. And I was really impressed, because here we had the technology without having, you know, and then they had the duct into each room like you and I would be worried about. That's really the only thing is getting that from room to room. And a lot of the commercial engineers have got that figured out. But that was exactly the same thing I'm looking at as well. So they work really good on big open designs, but you may be in such a case if the room's really big, you may have to have a head in there. But they do have those transfer fans, and it's, they fit the ones I've seen are fit up above the door, and the only downside that I could see was that maybe a little bit of sound transfer between the two.
Okay, do those fans run all the time?
You know, I think they're tied into the system. They may be thermostatically. That's an area that I couldn't tell you for sure, but I'm sure that they, you know, run on some sort of a control system. That's where the guys get the big bucks come in and figure that out. But because they're one of those two big brands that was mentioned earlier. Those will handle up to eight heads.
Really? And then if you have one compressor and you had a number of mini splits running off that, how many square feet could those, let's say, eight mini splits cover? I mean, are we looking at 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square feet?
Well, it depends on the model and, you know, the BTU, because the ones that I see all the time, the cheapest ones are like, they'll do 24,000 BTUs. So it just depends on the size of the house, and then it comes back to like what you and I would be concerned about is what are the room makeups and, you know, there has to be some design by the person that puts it in. So, you know, it depends on how big that unit is outside as well. I'm not sure exactly. I bet they change like every month. They get that much better. You know, if it's not too late, you might still be able to, you know, take a look at it.
All right, Todd, thanks a lot, Todd, for your call.
That was...
Here's another mini split question from Shirley. We recently built a four season room and have a mini split unit, which we love. We live in a 1.5-story brick home. We have central air, which is adequate for the first floor of our house. However, our bedroom is upstairs and is cold in the winter and hot in the summer. You mentioned that we can have multiple mini split units. How could we get a mini split unit for the upstairs when we have a roof to deal with?
Actually, the one unit would sit outside on the ground, and then they will run the basically a lot of it fits through about a 3-inch hole. The refrigerant, the drainage, and electrical will snake up and then go, you know, through floor joists or wherever on that
All right,
particular
so that's
house.
Not necessarily an
no,
obstacle.
No, that's kind of nice, and that's why you see them a lot of times on the outside of these office buildings, because really that's the only way sometimes they can actually heat and cool them is to put a mini split in.
All right, we'll try to squeeze in one more question. Lori in North Liberty. Lori, what's your question quickly?
Hi, I'm looking to solve the problem with condensation on a concrete floor in a lake home that isn't heated all winter. And when we go and we open the doors in the summertime, yep, immediately there's water on the floor.
Right, right.
I've seen this minimal like layer of insulation you could put down and then vinyl flooring, but I didn't know if that was adequate enough to solve that problem, or do we have to resort to heating the place in the winter to keep that?
No, this is exactly the reason why we try to get everybody to put at least 1 inch of foam underneath their floors when they're building new, because if you do that, then you don't have the situation you have. Really, the best case, if there's any way possible, you can put down at least 1 inch of, say, extruded foam. That's like blue, green, pink, uh-huh, the hard foams. And you can put that down on the floor, and then you would put down a layer of plywood on top of that and then put whatever floor you want.
Oh, okay. The ceiling's pretty low to begin with. But,
well, it would only be, now you're only talking maybe an inch and a half, so.
Uh-huh.
So everybody's going to, as you age, you shrink. So let's go that route.
But the thin layer that I see they're selling in the big box stores to kind of make your floors a little warmer,
yeah,
would not be sufficient?
No. No,
okay.
I wouldn't. Not with, you know, it might in some cases, but not for the extremes that you're going through of leaving it real cold and then, yeah. But Google that, insulating, do it as a basement floor, insulated basement floors, and you'll see all the drawings and everything
all
on
right.
those.
Lori, good luck with that.
Yeah,
and
good luck.
Cheryl called and asked, I have a home built in 1957. There was an attic built. The upper level has its own separate heating unit. It's really hot in the summer and hard to heat in the winter. Who should I call to come and look at it? So that's what her question is. How does she get started?
I'd have a general contractor come first, because maybe the attic above that room, the rafters haven't even been insulated yet. That would probably be one of the big things. And in those ages of houses, a lot of times there's knee walls. So when you're up in that room off to the off to the edges, you know, it might be a straight wall up by 4 or 5 feet, and then the angled pitch of the roof. Those areas, they're called knee wall areas, those can contribute a lot of heat and cold. So I'd have the contractor first, and then they can come up with a heating and cooling option.
All right. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, stops by just about once a month to answer your questions. He'll be back again next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, I'll have a conversation with marathoner Catherine Switzer, a record-breaking, rule-breaking marathoner from way back. This is Talk of Iowa.